people driven from their homes by the greenhouse flooding, the federal government was spending hundreds of billions on erecting new cities. The speech had ended with a plea for donations, of course. The audience was wealthy. Most of them were getting even wealthier on government contracts to build housing and roads and all the infrastructure that was needed to shelter the refugees and start them on new lives. Now Dex sat in the plushly quiet bar nursing a scotch and water, listening to the architect drone on and on. His wife had excused herself and hurried off to their hotel. Thinking of her in bed watching TV as she waited for him, Dex wondered why he was going through the motions of being polite to this bore.
"We've learned quite a lot from the life support systems they've developed on the moon," she was saying, emphasizing each word with the clicking tap of a manicured finger on the polished mahogany of the bar. She was rail thin, and her voice had an irritating nasal twang to it. "We'll be recycling the water and all the waste systems, turning garbage into electricity."
Dex nodded absently, wondering how he could escape her determined enthusiasm without being boorish about it. The architect was swiveling slightly on the stool to one side of him. On the other was an old friend of his late father's, a dim-witted old coot who thought that anyone under the age of 80 was a flighty kid who needed firm direction from his elders.
"You still involved in this Mars business?" the old man asked.
Dex thought that a century ago he would have been a poster boy for communist propaganda about bloated capitalists. The man was bald and corpulent, several chins lapping over the black tie of his tuxedo. His eyes were narrow, squinting, piggish. Nodding, Dex said,
"The trust funds the Mars Foundation." "Damned luxury we can't afford anymore," the old man said, his voice grating, harsh. "Cut your losses, Dexter, and turn your attention back here to Earth, where it's needed."
Dex bit back his first impulse to tell the old fart to go to hell. Instead, he replied mildly, "Mr. Younger, you could afford to fund the entire Mars operation out of your own pocket, you know that?"
"What? Me?"
"The team we're supporting on Mars costs a lot less than one of the cities Ms. Batista here wants to build."
"But people need my cities," cried the architect.
"Sure they do," Dex said.
"And we need to continue exploring Mars, too."
He wished he believed his own words. It wasn't until he and Vijay were sitting together on the sofa and the dishwasher was chugging away in the kitchen that Jamie said, "Pressure's building to shut down the program."
"Close it? You mean bring everybody home?"
He nodded, tight-lipped. "We've already had to shut down the new base at Hellas." Varuna Jarita Shektar had been the physician on the second expedition. She and Jamie had met in training, traveled to Mars together, and slowly but irrevocably fallen in love. The two of them stayed alone on the Red Planet for 4 months after the rest of the team had left for Earth and before the replacement team had arrived. Adam and Eve in a barren, frigid new world that was to them a Garden of Eden.
"But they can't shut down the entire operation," Vijay said, her luminous dark eyes blazing with indignation. "They simply can't. They mustn't."
Jamie wished he could work up such righteous wrath so easily. But he couldn't. It was all bottled up inside him. Everything. Including Jimmy's death. Especially Jimmy's death. He started to say. But the words caught in his throat. She was still incensed.
"How can they even think about shutting down the program? After all you've done, all you've discovered."
"Vijay," he said, grasping her by the shoulders.
"If I hadn't been on Mars, if I'd been here with you, and Jimmy..."
She stared at him, her eyes wide with sudden understanding.
"Jamie, no.
If I'd been here, the way a father should have been, he wouldn't have..."
"No,"
she snapped.
"Don't say it. Don't even think it.
But
it's not going to bring him back."
"I know. But still, I feel responsible. It's my fault."
It had taken him nearly 2 years to say those words.
"It's not your fault any more than it's mine," Vijay said.
"Yours? How could it be your fault?"
"I was here. I should have kept a better watch on Jimmy. I should have..."
Her voice faltered and tears misted her eyes.
He pulled her close, heard her sobbing softly, her head on his shoulder. V, we'll get through this, together, the two of us.
That's all that's left, isn't it? The two of us.
I don't want to lose you, Vijay.
You'll never lose me, love. We're one person, the two of us. Together, always.
You're all I have in the whole world. She pulled away from him slightly, blinking tears away as she smiled sadly and said,
No, Jamie, that's not true. You have Mars, don't you, love?
He couldn't reply to that. But inwardly he thought, I might not have Mars much longer. They're going to take that away from me, too. Tithonium Base, the Fossil. Nearly everyone in the base crowded around the big stereo table, ordinarily used to show three-dimensional views of Martian terrain. Now it was a blank, unlit white, with the palm-sized fossil vertebra resting in front of Carter Carlton. It was light gray, the color of ashes. Bits of dirt still clung to it here and there. Carlton surveyed their eager faces as they pressed close, felt the heat of their bodies, the scent of their excitement. Directly across the table from him stood Chang Laodong, the mission director, bald and dour in his dumpy-looking blue coveralls with their mandarin collar, looking as if he'd been sucking on a lemon, as usual. Trying to suppress the supreme delight of this moment, Carlton spread his hands and, smiling, said, Well, it's a vertebra. No doubt of it. Chang forced a pale smile. We must obtain verification of your identification from qualified paleontologists. Nodding, Carlton replied, I've already sent stereo images of the fossil to half a dozen of the top universities.
And to program headquarters in New Mexico?
Of course, Carlton replied. In his excitement, he hadn't even thought about Waterman back in Albuquerque until Doreen had reminded him of the mission protocol. Chang stared hard at the fossil, as if he could force it to give information by sheer willpower.
It certainly looks like a vertebra, said Kalman Torok,
running a hand through his thick mop of hair.
See the ridges.
And the central cavity where the spinal cord runs through, added one of the other biologists.
What kind of an animal is it from? Someone asked.
Who the hell knows? This is all brand new territory.
From what I know of physiology, Carlton said slowly, deliberately working to keep his voice calm, this looks like it came from a quadruped. Bipedal vertebrae don't have such thick walls.
Then it's not from a Martian. One of the intelligent species, I mean.
How do you know?
If it's not bipedal, intelligent species don't have to be bipedal.
I always thought Martians had six limbs, and they were green!
Everyone laughed except Chang. Looking unconvinced, the mission director repeated, We must get verification from experts. Carlton grinned at him.
With all due respect, Dr. Chang, there are no experts.
No?
This is a Martian fossil, the first fossil to be discovered on Mars. As Peterson said, we're entering new territory here, totally new territory.
Now wait,
Torok said, his heavy brows knitting.
It's got distinct similarities to terrestrial vertebra. That's how you identified it in the first place, isn't it?
Well, yes, Carlton admitted. But,
edging along the table toward Carlton, forcing the others to step back to let him by, Torok mused,
This brings up a fascinating conundrum. Do Martian fauna have structural plans that are similar to our own? Does form follow function, as the architects say?
That is not for us to decide, Chang said firmly.
He was a geologist and had been put in charge of the base because his days of useful scientific work had ended years earlier, Carlton was certain.
You already expressed the opinion that it's not from a biped, did you not?
Torok said to Carlton.
Yes, but that's just an educated guess.
To the entire crowd, Torok said,
We have the opportunity to learn how much of our own form and structure is unique to Earth, and how much is part of a general biological plan. There are no bells waiting for us.
Everyone whooped and cheered enthusiastically. Even Chang managed a pained